I admit it, I have been a skeptic on crypto. So let's find out what the actual is going on. I speak with Professor Omid Malakhan about crypto and what it means for IT services companies. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. So, I mean, thanks for joining me today. Now, the context for listeners is we were talking just before, and I gave you insight into the fact that we're talking to IT services companies. So that's the context that I think about this. I've talked about some of the crypto stuff on occasion in on my show, but I've really kind of struggled to say, like, I get what providers can do with this for the typical business, particularly when I put on my small business hat. But you've had some discussions about why you think owners should care about crypto. Why should they care about this space?
Because it's a new architecture for how we can all interact online. And that applies both to the products and services that companies sell, but it also goes down to something as simple as how they accept payments. And not just because there are now literally new currencies like Bitcoin that people may want to receive, though there's not much reason to today other than for vanity reasons. But there's actually a segment of crypto that's really working on making it faster, cheaper, better on how people transact dollars. And that's the kind of thing that matters to every business, particularly if your listeners are sick and tired of doing things like paying credit card interchange fees or paying payroll, but then for some reason their employees don't get the money till 3 days later.
Well, I mean, that's a real problem. And I think there's some so I could look at this and say, like, this feels still kind of theoretical for most of us. There's lots of products out there, but it's very chaotic. Isn't it still kind of theoretical for most businesses? If I lean on the payment processing bit, most businesses have a payment processing platform. Yes, they pay them a fee, right? But they're not building their own. They're going to end up in this newer world. They're just going to leverage what the new version of that is, right? Am I wrong on this?
No, that's right. It's still like your listeners could today go and start accepting dollar payments on the blockchain. It's just that there are so many frictions to do so today. And among the biggest one is that these things are not yet integrated into existing payment processors, point of sale solutions, etc. So a more pioneering entrepreneur could decide that dealing with these headaches is a good way to actually learn about how this new world works. Otherwise, everybody else, I am confident that in a couple of years, you sort of be presented with a menu. It's like, hey, you have these traditional ways where you get paid or do invoicing or other things. And if you like, here's the blockchain enabled version right next to it.
Okay, that gives me a good sense then. So what, if I'm thinking about these owners, I mean, you only have so much time and so much investment to look on these new technologies. And by the way, we get pitched a million of these, right? Well, it's going to be AI, it's going to be machine learning, it's going to be crypto. You've got all these. What are the signs then that we should be looking for that says this has reached a point of practicality where I can actually do something with it in a more, you know, generic business context?
One, the most obvious one is customers start asking for it, which is probably still not the case with people working in IT services. It is starting to happen in other contexts, like in financial services, for example, where you're hearing more that banks or their customers are asking, like, hey, can I do something with digital currencies through you? And the other thing to look for is we're slowly starting to see this technology being implemented by existing large-scale vendors, usually in some kind of a niche and pilot way. So, for example, Stripe, which is one of the biggest payment companies for online businesses, just announced a partnership with Twitter, where Twitter apparently pays certain content creators, and now if they want, they can accept digital dollars, these things called stable coins, directly to their wallet. That's a very niche application. But I think it's the first step to when we get to the point where the Stripes and PayPals and lots of other payment processors and other kinds of vendors, among the many things that they offer, is some kind of a blockchain-enabled solution.
All right, you brought up the stablecoin, and I'm curious here because, again, this is a space we're coming off a little bit of controversy, right? So he's what I would put in quotes, a so-called stablecoin, Terry, imploded, right? Like it was designed to be a stablecoin. It was positioned as such. How do I know? Aren't I just waiting for the U.S. government to issue theirs? Isn't that really the actual end game that I want as a typical owner? Or is there something in the middle here of what it might be? Because it feels like on one end, there's just chaos of people doing whatever they want. And then on the other end, money, like the way it's been for thousands of years, which is a centralized bank kind of model. And I'm waiting on a digital version. What's in between that's practical?
So I wouldn't totally dismiss the crazy experimentation. And I agree, some of it is crazy. And occasionally it does end catastrophically like Terra did. But this is where progress comes from. And like there's a lot we take for granted about what works on the internet today that if you go back 30 years and you told people like people are going to be buying shoes and clothing online without trying it on, they would be like, well, that's crazy. No one would ever want to do that. But with the particular stablecoin question, I do think it's a matter of time until every government does issue its own digital currency. We're years removed from it, and the U.S. will probably lag behind most other countries for various reasons. The middle, then, that you mentioned is there are far safer stablecoins using financial models that have existed literally for centuries, and they're increasingly becoming regulated. So I am confident that in time, those stablecoins will be just as safe as PayPal is, but because they use blockchain technology, they'll have a lot of unique features that PayPal cannot offer.
All right, I want to dive into sort of two points that you made there. The first, I'd make an argument that the online buying experience is less to do with the money and more to do with customer behaviors, right? We moved to buying shoes online not because of the struggles of money wasn't what was holding us back. It was other market factors around perception and around the about customer expectations. Am I wrong? Is it was there a money factor that I wasn't thinking of in that customer expectation journey?
No, you're right. I think the money factor, though, is if you imagine if we didn't have credit cards, the customer journey would have taken far longer to evolve. And in fact, in many countries where they don't have any kind of good electronic payment infrastructure, they still don't have as robust of an online shopping economy as we do. So that part of it is valid. But I also would not dismiss the possibilities of what crypto enables in terms of enhancing the customer experience. Just to give you a simple example, rewards, right? Like plenty of industries and companies build loyalty through some kind of a reward system. Today, they have to build some entirely different infrastructure to do that. And it's not very good. I mean, anyone who's trying to figure out what their situation with their airline miles is knows what I'm talking about. But if we move the dollars and the payments to stablecoins and this blockchain-enabled infrastructure, then any merchant or vendor could write three lines of code that, hey, anytime somebody's going to pay me from their blockchain wallet, I will automatically send them back rewards to that same wallet. And then the next time they come shop with me, I will be able to instantly see how many rewards they have and then offer them some kind of a bonus perk as a result.
I'm no financial expert, but my understanding is that one of the reasons why organizations like to control rewards points is because at some level they are a liability, right? So I'm a great example on this, right? I've spent a bunch of time being a flyer. I don't as much anymore, but I have this big bank of miles, right? The airline has the ability to value those internally and has complete control over that. And so because it's a liability on their books, right, I might cash those in. So by having actually some obscurity to it, they get control over that. Wouldn't they lose all of that if it becomes part of this system? Isn't that actually in a way bad for the reward system?
I never thought about that. It might be to the extent that your rewards are a way for you to make your customers think you're giving them something when you really, like, with inflation. There's actually studies that show airline miles are among the most inflationary currencies in history. And then there's blackout dates and all of that. So, yeah.
Right. Exactly. And they control the value.
Yeah. And yes, if there was like more transparency, which is one of the fundamental features of blockchain, that might be a little bit harder to do. I can't disagree with that point, but I feel like there would then be other airlines that try to compete and be like, hey, our rewards are not as shady as our competitors. Come fly us.
Fair enough. And we want to, you know, I definitely want to open the piece for that. But there's also oftentimes reasons for this. Now, the other argument that and again, I want to ask you because I want you to get your perspective on is I've heard a lot that you know, one of the reasons that has kind of old school money, and I'm putting it, has become revalidated is when we look at situations like what's going on in Europe. You know, the U.S. government has the ability to do significant sanctions on the Russian government because we control the dollar. Like, we control it. It is centralized, right? And so all the you know, there's this big push for decentralization, but we actually are losing some real significant value in centralization of money if we decentralize everything. What am I missing? What's the way that would work in a digital money perspective here?
Don't think we should or can decentralize everything. I think that is like, okay, you do meet people in the crypto industry who have this almost like anarchist view of how the world should be. Decentralization just sucks for many reasons. It's just the user experience tends to be terrible. Anything that's decentralized is very slow to evolve. There's a lot to be said for having powerful decision makers who can move fast and break things. But there are extremes, right? And I think like in some of the world has gone too far to the extreme of centralization. The US dollar is actually a good example. While we view it as advantageous as we can do things like sanction Russia, and increasingly America executes foreign policy through the banking and financial system. And we weaponize the fact that the world likes and uses dollars, and those dollars move through banks that the US government regulates. The rest mm-hmm. of the world, on the other hand, increasingly does not like that. And there is this growing idea that because of the radical actions that the U.S. government has recently taken, however morally justified they may have been, things like confiscating first Afghanistan's and then Russia's foreign exchange reserves in dollars, that's going to make every other government in the world want to hold less dollars, which ultimately will be bad for U.S. citizens because there are all sorts of benefits that comes from using the world's reserve currency.
Well, it's a dangerous weapon to use. I definitely, as with anything, it has offsets. But I think there, by the way, will agree on the moral points on this. But I would also say that there are many Europeans that are very happy that we're leveraging it in this way. I don't disagree that there's space for this, but it's like with any choice, it's one of those bits where there is a danger zone. You can overreach, but it is a power, it is a tool in the toolbox. And so thus the concern would be is if we lost it, well, we'd lose that tool in our toolbox for resolving problems.
What's going to be interesting is this multipolar world that we're headed in, where people will still use dollars and euros and to a lesser extent other currencies. But my personal thesis is that Bitcoin, because it is highly decentralized and really nobody controls it, will eventually become every government and potentially even major corporation sort of like emergency backup plan. So while they might keep 98% of their savings in fiat currencies like the dollar, they may also keep 2% of it in Bitcoin, just in case something goes wrong with the banking system or the government tries to impede them from doing something. And then they're like, okay, we have a little bit of this decentralized money that we know we can always do whatever we want with and no government can stop us.
So you just said something that I want to make sure that I understand, because because I think it's about the proportion. Because my perception of Bitcoin is that it's super volatile, right? And I'm aware that currency is volatile. I've done some international travel, right? You always worry about like, what's the dollar versus the pound? What's the dollar versus the euro? You know that there's a certain volatility, but I don't spend a lot of time worrying about, well, does my dollar buy me the same amount of milk, right? Like literally because of the cost of it. But my perception of Bitcoin is that it's too volatile for those bits. But you just said something that was really interesting. You said that you thought it would be a small portion, right? Like 2 or 3%, just like any particular asset. Am I viewing that right? Is it that it's a minority bit from a currency perspective? And I view it the same way that I might own a stock or a bond or any of the other somewhat more volatile asset. Is that the right way to think about this?
And you said something else that I think is relevant here. The funny thing about cryptocurrencies in general and Bitcoin too is that, yes, they're currencies, but Bitcoin is also its own payment system. And in a lot of ways, these are like startup equity. It's just that every crypto project's like startup equity that has liquidity and price discovery from day one. Which, if you think about like any business, right? Say I started a business selling a new brand of water or something. If my shares traded on day one, they would be insanely volatile because every little thing is existential when you're young, right? It's like, oh, I just signed a deal with a local supermarket chain. Then my shares go up fivefold. But then, oh, my co-founder just quit. Then the shares fall 50%. So crypto suffers from this problem, which is a feature in some ways, that it's just liquid and trading and transparent from day one. That makes everything very volatile in the short term. But just as like if my little bottled water company eventually becomes the next Poland Spring or something, at that point, it's going to be a lot less volatile because it's a lot more established. I think the cryptocurrencies that make it, and the vast majority, like startup equity, will not make it. But the ones who do make it will eventually reach a level of maturity where they will be a lot less volatile, at which point they might be appealing for more day-to-day kind of economic activity.
Is part of the issue with cryptocurrency, and I'm using the word again to try and break down the word, is it that in a way we have created this thing that is an amalgam of several other things that are distinct? It would be it's part asset, it's part stock, it's part currency. It is all those things. It is actually something else, and we're trying to apply old rules. Is my premise right there?
Absolutely. It's true financially. It's also true technologically. Like, blockchain and crypto is not the natural evolution of any one thing, right? Like, the smartphone came from the mobile phone, which came from the landline phone. This world is this weird amalgamation of cryptography and distributed systems and economics and game theory. And then its output is this weird hybrid thing that's money, equity, currency, digital art sometimes, all of which makes it very confusing. So I always joke with people, I've spent a decade being confused about crypto, so you don't have to be. But it also makes it potentially transformative.
I mean, I quip all the time, in mystery, there is margin, right? So in complex things, that's the opportunity to find something. But I will admit my skepticism here is the fact that I know it's a risk analysis, and this feels very risky for many, you know, many of, again, when I put on my typical business hat, I look and go, the average business, this feels very risky, and we're still waiting on maturity. What's your sense of where we are then? Are we really early and I'm just need this to mature, or am I misreading it?
No, I think you're absolutely right. For the average business, it's still very early. So the only thing to do is to learn. I will say though, if you're the kind of business that is in the crosshairs of this technology, then it's not early. Like for example, if you're in the payment business, but you're built entirely on credit card rails, and now here's effectively a new kind of dollar payment rail, you want to start figuring out how you're going to function on top of it today. Because if you wait until the day comes that I mentioned earlier, where businesses will just pick from a menu, oh, I want credit cards and stable coin, then it's too late for you to try to figure it out.
Okay. So what are the industries then that you think are in that crosshairs right now?
Primarily, it's financial industry. So the payment processors, the banks, a lot of the fintechs, their business model actually doesn't work in this domain. But that's also why we're seeing a lot of the fintechs already pivot into this domain. Like, we're already seeing PayPal make aggressive moves. I mean, Square renamed itself Block. Stripe is doing things. So for now, it's primarily going to be in the financial domain. And then we'll see with things like pure tech plays. I have this personal thesis that any tech company whose primary value offering is being a platform. So Uber, Airbnb, even Twitter. Like, none of us use these services because we like the company. We use the services because there's a driver on the other end, a homeowner on the other end, a reporter posting on Twitter. I do think eventually all of those will be replaced by something more decentralized, because then more of the value would go to the driver, the homeowner, and the reporter.
All right, what's your dark horse industry, the one that's kind of keyed up for next, beyond financial? What do you think their disruption might be next in?
Media.
Okay, intriguing. Why media?
Well, we're already seeing, the media industry sort of been like under assault for decades, because on the one hand, the web was great for media because anybody could watch, read, view anything anywhere. On the other hand, the web was terrible for media because you can't charge for anybody watching anything anywhere. So much of it moved on to this terrible ad-supported model. And I have nothing against advertising, but there is something that, like, too much is ad-supported now, which is, like, too much is clickbaity now and whatnot. And we're already seeing with, like, the Substack model, where those who have an established model are saying, I don't want to do ads, right? You just pay me, and I'll share my content with you. The problem with that Substack model is, like, if you're a nobody, no one's going to pay you. If you know, you're starting a day one, I'm going to write articles on something. So there's interesting different token-enabled business models that in the crypto world people are experimenting with, where basically a would-be writer, speaker, podcaster sort of like finances themselves initially by selling a token to their early fans. And not only does that token give fans access to the content, but it sort of becomes an investment in the future success of that creator.
Well, clearly I need to be working on making a coin then. So as we get to the end, you said something, and I want to ask for a definition to make sure that we get it. You defined anything that's a platform. Help me define your version of a platform, because it's a word that's used a lot and it's used in lots of different contexts. There's an investor context to it. There is a technology one that we use in my industry. What's your definition of a platform in this context?
The simple definition, and this is based on timeline, because like even like Uber, somebody had to build it on day one. There were no drivers before somebody wrote code to develop the app. But to me, when platforms reach a point of maturity, where clearly the vast majority of value is being created not by the company that operates the platform, but the producers who contribute to that platform. That to me is clearly it's a platform business. And then you look and say, what's the take rate of the company sitting in the middle? And a lot of times with existing solutions, it's like 20-30%. That you mentioned something earlier about, like, that margin is decentralization's opportunity. That if somebody figures out, hey, I can build a decentralized Uber where the take rate is 2%. So you still need somebody to write code and manage things and build the app and take customer service complaints. But in the decentralized version, less value goes to them than the contributor. That's my very admittedly broad definition of a platform. But I think it's sort of like one of those things where you know what it is when you see it.
It's like a duck. You know it when you see it. Well, this has been super interesting. If people are interested in learning more, how can they dig more into the topic?
The best thing would be, I have a new book coming out. It's called Rearchitecting Trust: The Curse of History and the Crypto Cure for Money Markets and Platforms. And it's actually a lot more about trust. And it's a lot more about the world, the way it works today. Like, I have a whole chapter on platforms. I have a chapter on payments. And then it gets into the crypto part, but it's more about the philosophical changes. And it is not meant, if you want to know how to day trade Dogecoin or something, then I'm sorry. My book will not help you. And then lastly, I have a blog on medium.com, and my Twitter handle is Malikon Ohms, O-M-S.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.